People get on TVs and they do a wonderful job making it sound like it's an exercise and calculus class. Okay. It's some of that, but not really. It's more about controlling one's emotions. You would have thought Tom Brokaw got on NBC and said, "The aliens are landing. Put gas in your car now or you will all die." The only thing the aliens are scared of is a full tank of gas. Okay. If you have a full tank of gas, you'll be safe. Okay. There was cars lined up all over Las Vegas like it was the apocalypse. And it was one pipeline of many that was shut down for 12 hours. It'll finish 8 to 10%. 8 to 10%. 8 to 10%. Every December, just like clockwork, it never fails. Only three times since 1957 has it finished between 8 and 10%. So, because it's an emotionally driven market.
Welcome to the Intelligent Investment Show with Matt Dahl and Garrett Lill. Actually, here comes my... Okay, thank you.
How old is he?
He's five. What'd you see? Never mind. Okay, bye, buddy. Bye. All right, welcome to the Intelligent Investment Show with Matt Dahl, presented by ARPG. I'm Garrett Lill. I stole your idea from pre-production yesterday, Matt, and I'm doing our first on-location shooting. So it's supposed to snow. In fact, I think hopefully you can see it's just starting to snow up here in my hometown, my parents' house. So I brought my five-year-old up here to play in the snow a little bit. And I don't know if you can tell. It looks like the ground is, like, covered in white snow right here. Is that how it looks to you?
It does, yeah.
Yeah, it's a white wall. Reality is the grass looks like that.
Oh, right? Man, I was enjoying the snow. I was like, oh, it's a winter wonderland where you're at.
I know. So I'm thinking, like, if I can just sit at the perfect angle and then get the flurries coming down really hard on this side, it'll just look like I'm, like, in the middle of a winter wonderland here. I was just sitting here, you know, enjoying the wonderful writings of Matthew Dahl and the fourth, I guess this is your, it says fourth quarter newsletter, but you release it early January. So fourth quarter 24, early, you know, first quarter 25 newsletter.
We basically cover the previous quarter and talk about what we think's coming.
I forget Phil Collins. So you always do for the listeners who aren't privy to the newsletter, you always do a musical theme in your newsletter. And this one was Phil Collins. I always forget that he was in Genesis also. Like that was he was one of the founders of Genesis. And then he does his own solo act later. And I just know him of Phil Collins, but I always forget Genesis.
Yeah, he was a phenomenal drummer and singer on his own, and then he joined Genesis, in the band. He was a front man of that band and played drums. Guy's just crazy.
So, which came first? Did Phil Collins come before Genesis?
No, nope. I mean, Phil Collins had his own career. I think he actually was in another band before that. You know what it was called? I'm a huge Phil Collins guy. I think Genesis started somewhere like around right at 1980 or something. And okay. Phil Collins was solo in the mid late 70s.
Gotcha. Yeah, that's kind of backwards. Usually you think of bands that somebody spins off and does a solo act. Usually you don't, I don't know of any other scenarios where, or other examples, I guess, of solo acts merging into a band. Doesn't it usually go kind of the other way around?
Yeah, usually a band, they break apart. And then they just kind of start their own solo career.
The newsletter that you put out, and this is kind of a prelude almost, we're like, this is like the sandwich of the meat of the sandwich here. Last week we talked about some of these topics, and then we're going to talk about them again a little bit in this show. And then next week, or 2 weeks from now, we're going to do the webinar that will sort of coincide with our next episode. So we might be hitting on some of the same topics here, but just kind of looking into 2025, I love the quote here that you kicked off your newsletter with. This is the time, this is the place, so we look for the future, but there's not much love to go around. Tell me why this is a land of confusion. Why that particular line as your highlight of the 2025 theme?
So when we came into 2023 and then in 2024, we'd been pretty wrecked from 2022, right? We had a lot of ground to make up. We had a lot of earnings to catch up. All of those things were taking place. We had AI obviously took over the big narrative of the years. We had these huge earnings spikes that were going to take place. And we had obviously inflation that was kind of had peaked out and was heading down. And the narrative changed from, you know, okay, they're done raising rates. When are they going to start cutting rates? And that was what, that was kind of 2024. So we came into 2024 thinking we were going to grow earnings from about $218 a share to about $245 a share. Turns out consensus rise is now sitting at about $238 a share for this year. I think we're going to finish right about 241. So we have that next year, about 271, 272. So we still have those, but we don't have the sort of that baked in. We know interest rates are headed south, right? And the Fed is going to cut rates like we thought they were going to cut rates. Okay. Are they going to bring policy rate, you know, to a neutral position? Okay. That's sort of the land of confusion. I think yields, and it's in specific to yields, and of course it impacts the equities. We know that, right? But the confusion is, well, where do we, interest rates are going down, but where are they going down at? Okay. Where do we see real yields end of this year? If you're looking through the prism of the 10-year, okay, I think we're probably going to have real yields probably where they're at now, which is about 1.4%, 1.3%. Okay. That's where they're at today. And it's literally today because the 10-year is up again. We're up almost 20 basis points in what, 7 trading days this year so far? We're up 20 basis points. So we're sitting at 4.75 on the 10-year. Okay. And we have CPI for all intent and purpose sitting at about 3.3, 3.4. Okay. We're coming in month over month about 0.25, 0.3. Call it 0.3. Okay. So that brings, if that puts inflation in the 3.3 range, right? If that's where it's going to be, and we have real yield, we have the nominal number, the 10-year sitting at 4.75, we got about 1.45% of real yields baked in. So if that comes down this year, the inflation number, I mean, okay, if that number comes down and gets, you know, closer to the Fed's target of, you know, mid to low twos, I think we'll see a 10-year follow it. Okay. So we'll keep that real yield there, but the nominal yield will move along with it. So will the real yield. But I think the shorter end is going to move quite a bit further, but I think we're going to really grab that term premium. And there was a really good article, the new St. Louis Fed official, his name is Musalem, Alberto Musalem. He talked specifically, and it was from the Wall Street Journal, and it's from Nick Timiraos. Okay. And for those of you who don't know, if an article comes out from the Wall Street Journal written by Nick Timiraos regarding a Fed official, that is code. That is code to let everyone know what the Fed is thinking behind the scenes. Okay. Here's the title of the article. Fed official says further rate cuts can wait. So we've talked about this over the years, right? The data changes, we change our mind. And I've been in sort of this, you know, 4 to 6 rate cuts this year camp. Well, we've had 2 hot labor numbers now, right? The labor number for November that came in December was hot, 287,000. And then the one that just came in today, 256,000 new jobs, which is why yields spiked again. Okay. Consensus was 153,000. So the Fed is very, very clear. And he's been, Jay Powell has been very clear as far as what they consider monthly data versus actual real signal. And actual real signal, they consider quarter by the quarter. Okay. One month of data can only give us 1 month of data. They've said that.
Right.
But 3 months of data is a quarter, and you have to take signal from 3 months of data. If it's directionally the same, you have to take that as signal. And that is what he said. And I'll take him at his word. Okay. Which means if we get another hot report in February, which I think we might, okay, then he has signal. That's real signal, which means we have a whole other quarter now where we would have to go normal or cold to start getting some of those rate cuts put back in. So, you know, I think right now we're going to sort of take our rate cut prediction based on the data that has come in, and we're going to have to change it. My guess is if we do get another hot month this month that comes out in February, I think we'll get 2, maybe 3 at the most. That's probably what will happen, because here's the thing. You have to look at it from a very simple point of view. Okay. We just put on 256,000 new jobs. After we just put on 287,000 new jobs. Okay. We've got earnings S&P earnings. We have GDP growth this year of 2.8%. We have a strong economy. And we have inflation not at goal yet. It's down from where it was, but it's not where we want it to be. So why do we want to throw accommodation to this? Right. It's not like the labor market is shedding jobs or not even meeting consensus. It didn't double consensus, but it'd be consensus by 66% today. Okay.
Yeah.
So for the Federal Reserve, for all of, the bookworms, the Federal Reserve, all 400 PhDs to go through that whole thing and say, well, this economy needs accommodation. They won't do it because, again, I really think this Fed has done a great job, and I think they've learned from their mistakes, like we all do. Everyone does. And they know somehow, some way, whether it's an endogenous event or an exogenous event, something is going to crack the economy, right? And it's going to slow it down, and they want to have some arrows in the quiver. And right now, they got a strong economy, and you fix the roof when the sun is shining. You just do. That's the old saying, right? So we've got a good economy. And the last thing they want to do is start giving away bullets that they can fire that they're going to need down the road. They're going to hold on to those bullets, and they should. Here's the thing. It's going to change the calculus for 2025 as far as what portfolios look like. We're going to say short duration still, shorter duration, kind of that 2 to 3 year range. But we're going to, we're going to go down in credit quality just like we talked about, okay, because we think the economy is just fine. There's not going to be issues, any issues servicing debt. However, the market might live closer to our base case of kind of that 6,700-6,800 range by the end of the year, instead of that bull case, which is that sort of that 7,000-7,200 range. Okay. That's what could take place. And that will be simply because rates will be higher, and that's going to put pressure on that multiple.
Yeah. You mentioned in your newsletter, and we talked last week about your base case and your outlook for the year, and you've got 6,800-7,200 in as the range. So is that, I was going to ask the question, what this new information, when the data changes, we change with it, what does that do to your outlook? But you're not saying it changes your outlook. It doesn't make you shift those numbers to say now it's 6,600 to 7,000. It's just now the potential for 2 to 3 rate cuts as opposed to 6 rate cuts is baked into your original outlook. It's just on the bearish side of that range versus the bullish side. Is that a fair way of saying it?
Correct. Because what's going to happen is we're not going to have the multiple earnings are going to have to pull their weight. We actually wrote about that. We're looking at $241 a share in 2023, which is about an 11% increase. $241 a share for 2024. We won't have those numbers. Earnings season actually starts next week. Okay. We're going to start to get some of those Q4 numbers in next week. Okay. That we won't have all the numbers until the end of this quarter. And we think we're going to finish up right about 240, 241, right through that range. Okay. So that's an 11% increase. Whereas next year we're looking at 270, 275, probably coming at 271, 272. Okay. So 271, 272. Okay. If we're using that as sort of our, where we're going to orbit around, we're looking at a 10 year at 4.5 on December 31st versus 3.5 on December 31st. That's going to pull probably 2-3 points of multiple out of that number. So instead of trading at 22 times at the end of 2025, instead of trading at 22 times end of 2026 numbers, which are about 310, 311, we'll probably trade at 19, 20 times, probably 20 times 311, which would be, actually that would be, 60, what are 311, 20, that'd be what, 60.
Oh, no, we're doing math again. But do we need to hit pause when we do math on the show? I don't want to put us on the spot when we're trying to do – you need a calculator.
I know. I said right here. I just want to stop and do it, right? So we're looking at, instead of trading at 22 times earnings, we might trade at 20 times earnings at, $311 or $310 or $315 a share, which will probably bring us close to that 64, 65, 6600 range instead of that, that explosive type 22, 23 times range.
Yeah, I think that's something that some of your average investors don't necessarily keep in mind, or I don't know if it's something they don't keep it in mind. It's just, it's almost, it's not very intuitive, I guess, to think about that, because when earnings are growing, earning multiples tend to expand, and there's several variables that play into that. But when earnings start to, when earnings growth slows down or earnings flatline or earnings start to decrease, so does the price multiple that people are willing to pay for those earnings. So it's a compounding effect. Just going from a 22 to a 20 multiple is about a 9% drop in equity markets. Yep. But that's not accounting for the fact that we probably saw another 10, 15% drop in earnings to create that, which is what you start multiplying a smaller number by a smaller number, and you end up getting a much smaller number for the final market price. So it can be very, it can be a lot more sensitive than people might realize. And that's true at the market level, but it is especially true at a stock by stock level. You get a high growth name that misses a quarter by 25% and all heck breaks loose.
Yeah, it absolutely gets taken out to the woodshed. And, you know, and here's the thing is at basically 22 times earnings right now, there's no room for error. And there's a big,
you said in your news, I was going to ask you about that. You said at this point in 2025, earnings have to carry their, they have to carry their weight. They have to pull their weight.
They do
this year.
They do. We're not, I don't see how much more multiple expansion we can get, right? The market is fully priced in these good earnings. The earnings growth is coming from obviously the Mag 7, a big part of it. Your NVIDIA's, your Alphabet's, your Amazon's, those things. And they will likely outperform their earnings guidance. Okay. But there's still 493 companies that make up roughly 70% of the S&P 500. They got to do their job too. Okay. If they don't do their job, you know, right back to the, to that double hit on the equation, you start multiplying a smaller number by a smaller multiple. It gets really small, really quick. And the market will do that in a hurry. You know, so, and some, you know, some research that we've gone through, what we know is, especially if we get, and there is no, just so we're clear, I don't want to scare anybody. There is no data anywhere that suggests that earnings are in any way going to contract or even flatten out. In fact, 2027's numbers just got released. I just saw them for the first time yesterday in FactSet, as far as S&P 500 estimates, 344 a share. Okay. That seems ambitious. Okay. But you know, hey, there's a lot of good companies. There's a lot of good people. There's a lot of good business. And if United States products, you know, we wrote about that too. If United States products can now be on the shelves internationally at a lower price because the tariffs are gone that we have to pay. Okay. Well, then I can see us making that up. I really can. So it'll be interesting to see what happens as these earning estimates come in. And are they expanding? Are they contracting? If so, by how much? How fast? Or are they staying relatively stable? Of course, I like it when they say stable because it's the stability of those earnings estimates that gives the market certainty. And if it's you know, again, 14.62% this year, 13.5% next year, right? As far as earnings goes, so we don't see a lot of movement in those estimates. The market will like that and will probably continue to have a very robust 22-ish multiple. As long, again, but that's all sitting on the backdrop of, well, if I can go to the fixed income market and get, you know, I get 20 times earnings on a 10-year treasury note right now, right? So if the market's sitting at 22 times earnings, well, you know, now we actually have a negative relationship, okay? So the market's actually sitting at a lower earnings yield than the 10-year treasury note. And that's a pretty rare thing. You know, usually, I mean, a 3-year, 10-year treasury note, you have a 33 times multiple, right? Okay. Whereas, you know, if you have a market that's trading at 20 times, you know, we've got a 20 multiple. Right now, the 10-year has a 20 multiple and the market's got a 22. So we actually have an inverse relationship in the earnings yield of the 10-year and the S&P 500, which is...
How rare is that? I didn't say it's rare, but how rare?
It's very rare. I mean, I haven't actually done the how many times it's happened, but it's not something you see every day. Okay.
Yeah.
And it's not something that makes me all that comfortable if I'm being 100% honest. So I would prefer to, because you know, the premium that you receive in the equity market is fair for the risk that you take. Right. So, well, now if the earnings yield is actually lower on the fixed income side, well, why are you taking the risk? Why are we taking the risk? So obviously that's when it gets into the earnings growth. So that earnings growth, the earnings really have to pull their weight. If they can't keep that multiple and that relationship with that 10-year in some sort of reasonable balance. And I would say right here, right now, we are on the very edge of that balance. If it falls one way, if we have treasury yield spike from here, where the earnings or the multiple of the 10-year comes down even further, or earnings on S&P miss and earnings season starts next week, I think we might have a bit of a bumpy road.
Well, and, you know, I know you said you're not trying to put fear in anybody, and that's not the goal of the show, or, you know, I'm not trying to do a fear sells and gets more clicks than good news does. So I don't want anybody to think that we're trying to be, you know, put the fear factor in there to get people paying more attention. But one of the things I do appreciate about you and on the show is that you're a realist, and there were at least two times last year that you straight up said, I'm not putting new money to work right this minute. It wasn't a right now the market's going to crash type of a comment. It was just, you know, right now I feel like it's we kind of have a little bit of a cool down period that we might need before we're going to want to put more money to work. And it just so happened both of those times you said that, it played out that we got a little bit of a mini correction on the heels of that. So, you know, I appreciate the honesty from it. It's not a fear factor. The economy's healthy. The economy's growing. Things are going well. My experience has been, or I want to ask your opinion on it. When you see these catastrophic meltdowns in the market, 25, 30, 50%, how many of those stem from just pure overvaluation? We just got way too high, way too quick, and things got out of hand, and we're at, you know, dot-com bubble 50 times, 100 times earnings levels, and it just goes back just because the math says it has to go back, as opposed to some big event happens that triggers an opposite overreaction on the other side. COVID's an example of this. COVID, I thought the market was going to go to about 12 at the end of COVID. It's like, yeah, this is never going to end. And I think my opinion would be that most of the time when you get these huge sudden drops in the market, they stem from some event that might be a little bit exacerbated by the fact that you started at a higher multiple. Mm-hmm. You know, maybe, the, you know, COVID, I think we dropped like 38%. If we were way overvalued going into COVID, we might have dropped 60%. If we were way cheap going into COVID, we might have only dropped 25%. But at the end of the day, the fact that it moved down quickly and a lot usually comes from just the fact that a big event comes and scares the crap out of everybody. When you get overstretched, and even if we were to come on the show and say, stocks are way too expensive, just because it might be a little bit stretched doesn't mean we're staring down the barrel of a crash. It just means that it's going to be, as you said, we got to, earnings are going to have to pull their weight, and things are going to have to kind of go perfect to keep hitting those bogeys.
I mean, it's a banjo string, right? That's what happens. The tighter you pull it, when it breaks, how hard is it going to snap back? Is the tighter.
Right. It's totally fine until it breaks.
Exactly. It's fine, right? But if it snaps, it's going to hurt. If it's loose and it breaks, no one cares. Right.
That's right.
It's like, you know, I mean, in the depths of COVID, right? If a company would have missed earnings, no one would have cared.
That's right.
In the depths of the financial recession, when you know the S&P was at 700, okay, and it was down 57%. You know, if I don't know, Russia invaded Ukraine, it probably wouldn't have mattered.
That's right.
It's yeah. When
we don't care in those scenarios that if you miss earnings, because at least you're still a company that's yeah. around to report earnings. As long as you have a number right. to report, we're still happy.
So this is one of those situations where you have to understand what the market is. The market we want to believe, and people get on TV, CNBC, and Bloomberg, and they do a wonderful job of making it sound like it's an exercise in calculus class. Okay. It's some of that, but not really. It's more about controlling one's emotions, one's clients' emotions, whatever. Okay. Because it's an emotionally driven market. And that's what makes the professionals, is they can see through the emotion. They understand that. And a great example of that is if you look at the S&P 500, I want to say three times since the creation of the S&P 500 in its actual modern form, which was created in 1957. Prior to 1957, the S&P 500 was the S&P 90. Now, then it became the S&P 500. Two or three times, three, I think, since then, has the market finished in the, what everyone says every single year. Oh, we're thinking it's going to be a, you know, a kind of a muted year, but a good year. It'll finish 8 to 10%. We hear it every December. Just like clockwork, it never fails. And they said it this year, and they said it in 2020. They even said it in 2022. Oh, we think the market will recover, but it'll be a muted year. World thing will probably get 10% out of it. Only three times since 1957 has it finished between 8 and 10%. So the point I'm making is that takes me right into the narrative that we're talking about right here, right now, is the market doesn't do what we think it's going to do or what it's supposed to do, whatever that means. It's an emotional machine. It's an emotional animal. So people get super greedy or they get very, very overcautious. Okay. Yeah. Very bearish. Okay. And it happens in the blink of an eye as far as how quickly that changes. And, you know, I mean, obviously we saw what happened in late 2021 into early 2022, and 2022 started the deterioration, and the market actually fully capitulated by June. It then headed back up and then capitulated again in October, sort of had a bit of what they call a double bottom. And I actually didn't think the one in October would eclipse the one from June, but it did by a very small amount. Okay. But then it turned right back around, and people didn't start getting bullish until just this very end of last year. Right. So people get bearish very, very fast. And I want to say these things happen in a blink of an eye. People tend to get very, very bearish and very, very negative because fear sells and people love to be negative. Don't ask me why, but 2025 will be the year of positivity. Let's try that. So
I like that.
But
at least on this show, it will anyway.
Well, I mean, that much we can promise. Everyone is so fast. Everyone is so quick to just get negative real quick and think the world's coming to an end. So they get bearish fast and they're very slow to get bullish, right? They're very slow to go, wait a minute. You mean things can actually go well? Here's a good example. Right here in Las Vegas, as we sit here right now on January 10th, the year of our Lord, 2025, we have these awful, awful fires happening in Los Angeles right now. And our hearts go out to all those people. I can't imagine what they must be facing, these beautiful homes, these beautiful lives that they've led, and watching everything go up in flames has just got to be just an utter nightmare that I can't imagine. So if any of you hear this, just please know our hearts are out to you guys. But one of the many pipelines, fuel pipelines that feed Las Vegas, you know, gasoline for our cars, comes from Southern California. Two come from Southern California and several come from Utah. And I think there's several other come from Colorado or whatever, but there's many of them. One of them last night was shut down because it originates somewhere over there where the fires are. Okay. It's reopened now, or it's going to reopen right now. It's only about a 12-hour shutdown or something like that. You would have thought Tom Brokaw got on NBC and said, the aliens are landing. Put gas in your car now or you will all die. The only thing the aliens are scared of is a full tank of gas. Okay. So if you have a full tank of gas, you'll be safe. Okay. So there was cars lined up all over Las Vegas, all over the part of town that I live in here in Summerlin, just like it was the apocalypse. And it was one pipeline of many that was shut down for 12 hours. Yeah. It just goes to show you, people just, and they overreact. And yeah. They overreact to fear, and they do it out of an abundance of caution or whatever they want to call it. And I know that they're hardwired to do. We're hardwired to protect ourselves, and that's why that fear emotion is so strong and it's so overwhelming, and you act on it quickly, versus you know, where you're more sanguine about something. It's kind of like, okay, what do I do? I'm happy about it. So what should I do? Your action plan is not so clear at that point in time. Right. So, you know, that's the stock market in a whole is you have to manage the emotion. So, OK, if the market is sitting at 5,800 right now, 5,810, as you know, we're having just an awful day. Well, actually, we're up 5,857. We're up off the lows a little bit. OK, so
we're only down about 1% for the year so far.
Yeah.
I mean, it's been fairly modest.
But I honestly could see this market going to 5,500. I could see it going to 6,100. It could live in that range. Okay. So, all right, that's fine. So if somehow, some way the market gets down into the 56. So since the election, we've been holding new money on the sidelines. The market has just went parabolic. It's just been too hot. Obviously tax loss harvesting. We think that's starting to take place now. So we'll probably allocate those dollars in a little bit lower price when I think it's more fairly. We're not timing the market. We're pricing the market. That's what that means. We're pricing the market, but it's fair valued at 5,500, 5,400. I would be okay with that. It's fair valued at maybe 6,000. Okay. That's okay too. So it will probably run through that range. Let's say Mongolia decides to invade Sri Lanka, you know, and the market goes to 4,800. That's when you know that's okay. That call it that 5,400 to 4,800 differential there. That's emotion. That's the emotion. Yeah. And that is that's the calculation we make is, wait a minute, this is okay. I can see it getting to here, but when it goes further than that, that's just, I mean, we have earnings and economies and GDPs that are much stronger than this. However, it can go the other way. People can say, you know, the market, if let's just say the market just kept going. There was calls last year. Fundstrat had a call last year. They thought the market was going to finish at 6,300. And they actually posted that in December, late around Thanksgiving, actually. And I thought that was pretty ambitious. But their reasoning was sound. It was the animal spirits. It was the momentum. It was the emotion that was going to take it there. Fair value, 6,000. Okay. So that 300, if it would have finished at 6,300 and it was fair up with the upper end fair value of 6,000. Okay. Well, that 300 we know shouldn't be there. And that absolutely we're going to have to hold off. So when it was living over 6,000, I was just not happy. Now we're kind of in a little bit of a downtrend. We're getting toward that 50-day moving average. Earnings season is coming up. A lot of buy the rumor, sell the news as far as, you know, Trump coming in and a lot of that sort of energy is starting to just kind of, you know, ameliorate a little bit. And those are good things, you know, and I think we'll see kind of a smoothing out of after we'll probably get a correction, but I think we'll see a pretty smooth spring. I think it will probably be a normal bumpy year. Don't get me wrong. I don't think it'll be smooth. But I think once the market kind of pulls back into this kind of the, if you're looking at what they call a Keltner channel, into sort of the middle dash part of the line, into its range, kind of below the middle somewhere, I think that will be a really good place to enter the market.
Yeah, I was thinking when you were talking about the S&P being, you know, finishing it between 8% and 10% three times, that's hilarious to me because everyone knows that's what the S&P average is in that range. And, you know, but we don't hit the exact average very often. And I was thinking, I play a lot of golf, although right now, obviously not exactly the good weather for it, but there is a place 7 minutes from my house called Sully's Golf and Gather. It is an indoor golf simulator paradise with a bar and hangout area and things like that. So that when it's snowing outside, guys like me can go over there and hit golf balls and pretend it's sunny and play golf.
Have a beer.
But it has launch monitors out there to give you like your launch data. It was so funny yesterday when I finished up.
Is that stuff pretty accurate? It is.
It depends on the monitor. Okay. So there are some really good monitors and there are some, I was actually just talking to the guy that owns the place about it, that there are some that are better than others. But if you get a good one and he has good ones, yeah, it's pretty spot on. So it's pretty cool. But it lets you track this stuff, right? And it tracks things like launch angle, ball speed, spin rate, side spin, launch angle to the target line, all these things. And it uses that to tell you where the ball would land. But then it also keeps that data so that you can review at the end how you did, what you need to work on, things like that. And it just so happened yesterday that when I finished up, I looked and for 25 shots or however many I'd hit, my average direction left or right was 0.5 yards, half a yard. And I'm hitting 175-yard shots. So on average, over the course of 25 balls, I'm hitting the ball 175 yards and I'm missing my target by a foot and a half. That sounds pretty good.
Wow.
Except not maybe one ball actually landed on the target line. That averaging was 10 yards right, 10 yards left, 10 yards left, 10 yards right, 10 yards right, 10 yards left. So what I'm more interested in, honestly, is not what the average is. I'm more worried about what we would call the standard deviation of those off lines, right? How consistent can I make them? Because you tell me that it's an average of zero offline does not mean that I hit every single shot down that line. And it's the same thing with the market, I think. And there's got to be something about the markets in that analogy. But I think where I'm maybe kind of going with it is investors, I think, are maybe at all levels, but I think especially your average investor tends to be a little bit overly, maybe this is more of professionals, honestly, a little bit overly ambitious in their ability to predict with precision what the market's going to do. A good investor is just someone who knows that in general it's going this direction, but day to day, hour to hour, week to week, even we're not betting the farm on the accuracy of this one prediction. We're just understanding that we tend to have a tendency to do this in these scenarios, but the wiggle room, we have to have a lot of wiggle room there, and a lot of, as you said on the last show, humility to be able to say, okay, this is what we think we're going to do, but we also should be smart enough to remember that of all the things that we know, we should know that we don't know exactly what's going to happen and that we should prepare to be wrong. That's part of the game.
Well, I mean, as a happily married man, I'm prepared to be wrong all day, every day, you know.
Otherwise, you wouldn't still be married. As a happily divorced man, I can tell you. Yes.
So you have chosen to be right. And as
I chose to be right. You chose to accept.
So Saruman would say, so you have chosen death. Lord of the Rings. So you have chosen death. And what will, I mean, let's take a very recent one of my predictions, one of what we were thinking last time, but we were living kind of 4 to 6 rate cuts. We just talked about that, right? Well, the data changed. The data looks like it has changed. Okay. There's another data point or two to come in, but if they are directionally the same, then okay, we have to stop and take account and go, wait a minute. Now we have this rate cut scenario in front of us, which was why when we built the portfolios for this year, we came into them with, you know, a little bit of humility. Like, I'm not sure. I think rates are directionally lower, but I don't think it's going to be a straight shot there. And I think the yield curve is going to look a lot cleaner at the end of the year. We're going to get that term premium back and everything. Okay. So it's going to be kind of a choppy year as far as yields are concerned. That's why this is the land of confusion right now. And what is the utility of providing a prediction for the market for the end of the year? There's two types, right? People think there's no utility in that. And there's people think it's a great exercise. I think it's a useful exercise. Okay. But I also think there's no utility other than to say, just like you said, what direction is it going and about where it's going to land? So like you're hitting a golf ball, are we hitting it that way? Or are we hitting it on the hole number 5? Or are we hitting it to hole number 6? Right.
Where's the flag? Right. Yeah. Where's the target?
Well, you think it's that way and it's going to land on that green. I mean, the hole is 7150. Maybe it's 7100. Okay. So if it lands at 7150, I remember the year we called for 4750 at the end of 2023. And it finished at 4780. That was about as close to a hole in one as we ever got. Okay. But that's a hole in one. Okay. We're looking to land on the green. That's what we're looking to do. So the green for us is 6,800 to 7,200. That's our green. 7,100, that's our hole in one.
You mentioned yesterday, I love this idea. Let's close the show out with a stock pick or a stock idea or just an investment theme or a thesis. I guess just what's something maybe out of nowhere, no, they're not going to hear this stock pick or this investment pick anywhere else except the Intelligent Investment Show presented by ARPG.
Well, I would say a good contrarian pick. No one's going to, you know, I don't think anyone's on board with this one would be NVIDIA. Ah, I'm kidding.
I was going to say.
Like, yeah, yes. Right. Like, take a number. No, of course not. NVIDIA, of course, is a great pick. I think it's going to do good this year. As far as a good contrarian pick, I don't know that I'm completely alone on the island on this one either. But I think I'm somewhat, probably in the minority, let's just put it that way, would be Boeing. I think Boeing could surprise people this year and get over 250 and close to 300 by the end of the year, you know, and basically finish the year at 170. So it's not quite a double, but it'd be a strong performance. There's a few reasons behind that. One, it looks like it has broken out of a trend that has been in for quite some time. Okay. So there's some technical analysis here. Buy setups have happened on my DeMarc symbolics, which look really, really good, both on a monthly and a weekly basis. There's something that I noticed, actually, when we were talking about this yesterday. It has generated almost the most perfect, and we're probably $20, $25 away from it, the most perfect 4-year, almost 5-year now, 4.5-year reverse head and shoulder pattern.
Wow.
Okay. I mean, and it started, the left shoulder started in October of 2020 and it had a perfect double bottom in the middle of it. And this is the right shoulder coming up. And once it gets about 210 and goes through it, you know, that looks good. The other thing is they, if you look at in 2019, they were $435 a share. Okay. Earnings that year were -$3.47 a share, thinking that they were going to recover with the 737 MAX and earnings in 2020 were going to be great. Well, of course, they were terrible in 2020. Boeing lost $23.25 a share because every plane company on Earth canceled all their orders due to COVID because we thought we were going into the dark age.
Yeah.
Well, slowly but surely, through complete and utter incompetence, they have managed to take something bad and make it worse. In 2021, they lost $9.44 a share. In 2022, they lost $11.06 a share. 2023, they lost $5.81 a share. And then last year, you know, we believe they're going to lose, when it's all said and done, $16 a share. Okay. However, this year, it looks like they're going to make a $1.07. Okay.
Hey.
$1.07. Remember that band of $1.09? Hear them? Well, Boeing is a very long-term play. And the thing is there's you have to have wisdom with Boeing, right? And you know the old saying about wisdom. Wisdom is knowing tomato is a fruit, but not to put in a wisdom is knowing not to put in a fruit salad. I'm sorry, I said that totally wrong. Edit that out.
Try it again.
No, the difference between knowledge and fruit.
Knowledge. Okay, now
you're
going to
be editing.
I was going to take it out
for a while here. You're going to be editing for a while. So the difference between knowledge and wisdom, that's what I meant to say. The difference between knowledge and wisdom, right? So if you look at the earnings of Boeing, and they've lost all this money for these many, many years. Next year, they're going to make a dollar. So if we at $170 a share, which is basically where they're at now, they're trading at over 24 times. Almost 25 times 2027's earnings. Okay. Wow. So that's a pretty high multiple 2 years out. Okay. So right. That's the end of 2027. So that's actually like 3 years out. You know what I mean? So that's a pretty big pill to swallow for that long a time. However, it's a duopoly. Okay. And it's the only American one. And again, you have this administration, and they're not going to let Boeing fail, okay? There's defense spending that's going to be happening under Trump, and Boeing is going to be a big beneficiary of that, okay? And, you know, the knowledge that I know that we're 25 times 2027's earnings is okay. But the wisdom says, I think America really wants Boeing to do well, and they will, okay? Because they have in the past. And it's such an iconic company that they will find the right leadership and they will get it straightened out. And, you know, because you just can't fire up an airplane manufacturer all that easy. So, you know, and there's knowledge and there's wisdom. And that's where this is coming from. And the old saying about knowledge and wisdom is knowledge is knowing tomato is a fruit. Wisdom is knowing not to put in a fruit salad. So that's where that comes from. So after I butchered that three times, like I swear,
we'll see how this plays out post production. There's a very good chance I'll leave that entire thing in there. That was hilarious. You butchered that so bad.
It was like, I just forgot how to talk for like 2 minutes. So, but I think Boeing's going to surprise people. I think it's a great company. I think like every other one of us, they've learned from their rather significant mistakes. And they're better for it, and we're all safer for it too.
I have to if I'm going to make fun of you and you're not and your inability to talk for 2 minutes, I got to tell you a funny one from mine. A couple of weeks ago, after our show, I had another show right behind that, and then a third recording after that.
Wow!
And when I got on the first show, I was just doing the editing for it last night. I get on the show and I said, "Welcome back to." I don't remember which name of the show is, and I had to go back and look to see which show I was even recording. I couldn't even remember the name of the show that I was done. I had done so many podcasts that day, I couldn't remember the title of my own show. And that was the bad thing was that was the Advisor Advocates podcast. That's my podcast. I forgot the name of it. Anyway, well, I pre-recorded and saved our disclosures at the end, so I don't have to say that every single time now. I can just throw that little outro at the end. But I will just say it again for old time's sake one more time. If you know, Matt and I are absolutely not here to give you financial or investment advice. That would be reckless and irresponsible since we don't know you or your financial situation. However, if you would like to speak to Matt and his team, you can give him a call at 702-655-8300. He would be more than happy to help you navigate your investment decisions, financial decisions with he and his team. Sharp guy. Thank you as always. Always a pleasure. See you in a couple of weeks. Look forward to seeing you then, man. As always, the Intelligent Investment Show is for your entertainment, education, and general amusement purposes only. It is not intended to be financial advice or investment advice of any kind. Neither Matt nor I or any of our companies or associated entities know anything about your financial circumstances, so it would be unwise for us to tell you what to do with your money. We encourage you to seek a professional if you do have questions about your portfolio or your financial plans. If you would like to reach Matt and his team, you may do so by giving him a call at 702-655-8300 or visiting intelligentinvestment.com.
We thank you for joining us. We'll see you next time.